Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report. I am Tyler Hayward. With me today, Grant Essenmacher, to help me recap what was a not so great weekend for the Michigan State Spartans as they fall to the Indiana Hoosiers in Bloomington, losing the old brass platoon for the first time since before Mark D'Antonio arrived on campus, 24-21 in overtime. Just not a great game all around. If you are a Michigan State fan, makes you start questioning the future, not down the road with D'Antonio. Obviously, there is the faith behind him because of, well, his track record in East Lansing. However, the immediate future, what Michigan State is playing for, what changes need to be made to the team this year as you see redshirts continue to fly off the shelves. Justin Lane, the latest to have his removed as he played significant snaps against Indiana, however, didn't have anything to show for it. Like I said, Grant Essenmacher is with me. Grant, I kind of want to get your thoughts on the game before we start diving into the specifics.
I mean, you know, I thought as a whole there were a lot of issues other than everybody's favorite one, which is quarterback. And I think that those became very evident in the game, especially later on in the game. You know, even in the beginning when State was up 7-0 and they got themselves a lead, it seemed like, okay, you know, maybe they are going to take care of business on the road. But then, you know, they're moving the ball and they just kept shooting themselves in the foot. You have penalties. You know, they get to a certain point in the field, the 50-40, they just stall out on offense. And then, you know, defensively, honestly, if you look at the total score of the game, it's a little bit surprising considering the fact that their opponent, Indiana, is a team that scores a lot of points and has the capability to score a lot of points. But in our last podcast previewing the game, I did say Indiana gives up 22 points per game going into the Michigan State game, and I said 22 would not be enough. Michigan State would have to score more than that, and they scored 21. So, you know, I mean, it ended up being just not enough. And, you know, we could talk about overtime and decisions of Dave Warner and the decision to not go for two or whatever it may be, but those decisions I think are not as important as overall the issues that you're seeing as a whole.
And we will kind of talk about the decision to not go for two a little bit later in the show because we are going to talk about the specifics of what does need to be changed. But let's talk about the defense, man. Overall, you got to think that Michigan State did a very, very good job on Indiana. They shut down Devine Redding for the most part. Lego was solid, but at the same time, his numbers are a little deceiving. I mean, Redding did average 5 yards a carry, but given what Michigan State, how they typically perform against the spread, that's a solid number, especially since a lot of those runs came later off of draw plays. So Michigan State was anticipating the pass, much like Notre Dame. When they anticipated the pass, it opened up the running lanes a little bit, but they stuffed it at the beginning of the game. And you kind of saw it with Lego, too. He kind of picked up a little bit later. Not saying that Michigan State went into that prevent, but at the same time, you can only hold down Indiana for so long. And I think what Michigan State did against IU, they played fantastic on defense. Obviously, there are still some issues. Vyante Copeland gave up a big play. I mean, he did have the nice interception after, I believe it was Demetrius Cox or Monte Nicholson. It was one of them. Just kind of sat down in the middle of the zone and did not follow his receiver into the end zone. Copeland had a good job of turning on the play, going back and getting the interception in the end zone. Tyson Smith, he gave up a big one down the sideline. Still an issue with Michigan State's defensive backs to turn their heads around. But other than that, like I said, you're only going to hold down Indiana for so long. I thought Michigan State did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, on defense, you know, one area that I think still is troublesome is the pass rush. They had one quarterback hurry all game, and then you even look at getting in the backfield in general, the defensive line, just getting back there as a whole, they only had two tackles for loss. So, you know, that's still a problem. But I think that also does speak to how well the secondary did play outside of one or two plays that, you know, the Copeland big play. But, you know, outside of one or two plays where they kind of had mental slip-ups or just got beat, you know, I thought the secondary actually did play a pretty good game. And when you look at Redding's stats, like you said, they are, you know, they're a little bit skewed considering the fact that one of his runs was for 36 yards. So, and like you said, we're kind of talking about the big play right now, and good defenses eliminate those. I mean, the stats back up that Michigan State played well on defense, but Indiana did get to 24 points. And I think part of that is, you know, you can't let the big plays happen, and those big plays are really killer right now for them.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at Michigan State's defense, you throw in the fact that we thought they were going to have a lot of issues with Riley Bullen and the communication on the defensive side of the ball. John Reschke out as well. Now Chris Fry appears to be hurt. We don't know how long this is. Riley Bullock, he'll probably play against BYU, maybe sparingly, maybe coming off the bench. But he's probably going to play against BYU based upon everything that we've heard. John Reschke, like, said he's out for an extended period of time. Speaking of which, breaking news. Ben Carter, Michigan State's transfer from UNLV in basketball, now out an extended period of time as he injured his knee once again. Not a good thing for the Spartans in basketball either, as they have very limited post options. But yeah, no Riley Bola, no John Reschke, Chris Fry gets hurt. All right, what do we have at linebacker now, man?
You know, you're looking at if Riley Bullen does play sparingly, you have him. But if, let's say, he does come off the bench or doesn't play at all, you're looking at your starters being Shane Jones at the middle still, who I actually did think did a pretty good job against Indiana. I think, you know, as a backup, your expectations are pretty low. And when somebody comes in as a backup and plays well, it, you know, it makes you happy as a fan. You have Dowell, who I also thought played well too. You know, if Frey is out for an extended period of time, then you're looking at the other linebacker spot is Ed Davis. But, you know, Michigan State so far has really only used him in pass rushing situations. So if they aren't going to commit to playing him full time, then you're looking at Tyree Thompson. You're looking at maybe Byron Bowen going to the outside, which would be an adjustment. But, I mean, that's always a possibility. So, I mean, you know.
Do you see Shane Jones maybe going to the outside if Bullitt does play?
Yeah, I think that if they decide, Michigan State right now is going to decide on the three best linebackers, with Ed Davis maybe being the fourth as a pass rush option. So they have to look at Jones, Dowell, and if Byron Bull is the next guy, then those three, which one of them best fits the middle? Because I think that's the most important part of the three in terms of making the calls, making the reads at the line. When Byron Bullitt did get some playing time against Indiana, I did see him confidently step up to the defensive line and adjust them a couple plays, make some reads. So, you know, if Michigan State's coaches feel that that's the way they want to go, I think that's also a possibility too. But you really need to play your three best guys at this point when you start having this amount of injuries to that core.
Yeah, and, I mean, you said it. Shane Jones will probably bump over to, I would guess, the Sam linebacker spot should Riley Bull will come back. And you said it, obviously, Michigan State will decide who's better on the outside, who's better on the inside between Byron and Shane if those two end up being the starters. But there's just very limited experience at linebacker now, which really sucks given the fact that was the deepest group. That was probably the deepest group in the entire country. I mean, you do feel bad for the guys, but at the same time, injuries are part of the game. And again, this is all speculation. We don't know the situation with Fry. We'll probably hear a little bit about it tomorrow from Coach D'Antonio, unless it ends up being something severe, in which case word will probably end up leaking today. But, yeah, very unfortunate situation. at the linebacker. Let's move up to the defensive line, because the defensive line took a little bit of a hit as well. Malik McDowell suspended for the first half of the BYU game. And here's the situation. He got called for targeting, leading with his helmet, I'm assuming was the call. There was no helmet-to-helmet contact. He led with his helmet then, even though he hit leg out with his shoulder pad in the chest. But that was the call. They set the call stand. So he's going to miss the first half of the BYU game. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching the game. Okay, yeah, it's going to be rough for Michigan State to finish this game without McDowell, because he was the only person on the defensive line applying pressure. And then I was like, he'll come back for BYU. Michigan State will have the opportunity to appeal. They'll talk to somebody. They can get this overturned. Mark D'Antonio said afterwards, I'm not exactly sure when he said it, but he said there is no appeal process for targeting. And I want to get your thoughts on that situation. And let's talk about the defensive line depths now, because Michigan State might be going a little bit deeper there.
So, yeah, you know, with the whole targeting thing, let me preface all this by saying I think the rule itself and the way it's worded is one of the dumbest rules that college football has, and I think it could be improved. Now, the rule, I looked it up because I was interested to see, you know, if it involved other areas of your body besides leading with the crown of your helmet, because clearly, you know, if you lead with the crown of your helmet and you hit somebody in the neck, head area, that's going to be a targeted call. You're going to get thrown out for that. That's an easier one, but that's not the case here. And so it does say that targeting can happen if you hit an opponent with something that's not the crown of your helmet. And, you know, and it says your opponent has to be a defenseless player. And I think the way that that's ruled or worded in the rule is so creates such a gray area. You know, that hit, you look at Malik McDowell's hit just as a singular action, you don't really think of that as, okay, he deserves to be ejected from a game that's really close at the end, and then he also deserves to sit out the first half of the next game for doing that. You know, he's not, it wasn't a hit that caused an injury, and it was, you know, it was not malicious or looked malicious in any way, shape, or form. So,
yeah,
you know,
and even
I don't
by the letter
that,
of the law, he didn't even hit him with his helmet.
Right. So, you know, I don't think that he deserves getting thrown out and being suspended. And in terms of having no appeal process, that really doesn't make any sense to me. Just about everything has an appeal process now in the NCAA, and you're going to tell me that one of the most gray area rules in the NCAA has doesn't have an appeal process? I mean, that to me, that doesn't make any sense at all. So, it's really unfortunate for Michigan State. I don't agree with the call. I thought it was a bad call. And now they're without their best defensive player for a half against BYU, coming off two losses, which is a major blow. So,
yeah, and BYU, they do run a spread. Not 100% sure of the type of spread it is, but they're running it, and they're running it under the tutelage of one of the most prolific quarterbacks in the history of college football, Ty Detmer, the offensive coordinator at BYU. And obviously, we will talk about that a little bit later this week when we preview Michigan State's game against. Let's talk about Tyler O'Connor again. I know we have beaten the subject to death, but unfortunately, when you do look at the armchair coaches, according to Mark D'Antonio, when you look at the armchair coaches, they are pretty much beating Tyler O'Connor to death. A lot of negative reaction to the way that he played against Indiana. And frankly, and I know that you kind of feel the same way, I don't think he played that bad.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that Michigan State did not lose to Indiana because of Tyler O'Connor. I think there's parts of Tyler O'Connor's game that can be improved upon. I don't think he throws a deep ball well. He seems to me more of a short to intermediate type passer. And I think that is what it is. He is who he is. And I think he can be an effective short to intermediate type passer. I think he's shown that so far this year. But as a coaching staff, as an offensive coordinator, you have to accept the fact that really that's how you're going to move the ball. Stop taking long shots down the field and having him underthrow it to either get an interception or have an incomplete pass or whatever it may be. Now, granted, he has completed some of them, one of which was the Corley one against Notre Dame where Corley kind of bailed him out of the throw. But, you know, so far this year he's averaging, I believe, somewhere in the 7-ish range, 7.85, I think it is, yards per attempt. And I think that is really where it needs to be. He's not a deep ball guy. And if you're going to continue to go with him and that seems to be what they're going to do, then you have to have him throw shorter intermediate-type routes. And that's just what their offense is going to be. And he's not Connor Cook. He can't air it out downfield it with accuracy. He's right. Not that type of quarterback.
No, and I mean, I think you talked about it. He doesn't have that deep ball. He underthrows the guys. You look at the Donnie Corley play, the throw that looked like it was in double coverage. Go back and you watch it, Corley has a step and he's slowing down to turn around to back towards the ball. He was beating that safety. Mm-hmm. Connor Cook makes that throw, or at the very least, makes it a little more interesting. And, I mean, that's the biggest thing, though, is the comparison to Connor Cook is so unfair. Connor Cook led all draft-eligible quarterbacks in deep ball completion percentage last season. Led all draft-eligible quarterbacks in deep ball completion percentage, and so that's what everybody wants. Kirk Cousins is leading the NFL in completion percentage. That's what everybody wants. O'Connor, he's not either of those guys, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. Let's see, where do I have it? All right, the Spartans ranked 12th in the Big Ten scoring right now. Obviously, that's bad. They're averaging 406.3 yards per game, 236 yards per game through the air. You want to know something, Grant? Those numbers are better than what they were last year. And Michigan State played about the same type of schedule. Really rough Wisconsin team. Mediocre IU team whose defense is much improved. FCS school, and then a not-so-great Notre Dame team. So it's about the same strength of schedule when you look at it. Those numbers are better than what Connor Cook had last year. Connor Cook completed 56% of his passes last year. O'Connor's completing 60%. It's not on O'Connor.
Right. 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 And I think too, those numbers also indicate that the one thing they are having issues doing is finishing drives. But they're not having a problem moving the ball. And really there hasn't been very many games outside of maybe Wisconsin where I just felt like they were incapable of moving the ball downfield for a full drive. And part of that, too, is to bring up another sore area, is Geiger's 2-for-5 on the year in field goals. So, you know, if you take – that's 9 more points that State would have this year. And that's just on field goal attempts. Not even considering stalling around the 20 or having to kick a long field or whatever it might be. So they just.
And how many times did Michigan State have to go for it on fourth down this year? When you're looking at about a 44-yard field goal, they decided to go for it instead on fourth and two.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you talked about sustaining the drive. Here's the thing: is OC is doing a pretty good job throwing the ball. When you're looking at third and, let's say less than 8. All right? When you're looking at third and less than 8, he's 13-21.
Right.
When you're looking at third and 9 or more, he's 4-for-12. And he's taken, what is it, 4 sacks in those situations. So the problem is the offensive line needs to get a better push to help the running game. The offensive coordinator needs to call plays, at least passing plays on first or second down, that help set up these third and short situations, because you said it, he's not Connor Cook. He can't throw the deep ball. You've got to avoid the third and longs, and Michigan State didn't do that yesterday. They had 5 of them of at least 8 yards or more, and 2 of them were 15-yarders.
Right, and even if you Dave Warner loves to run the ball on first and second down, and obviously, you know, a lot of the Michigan State fans out there are clamoring for his head as well. But if you are going to do that, you could get more creative with how you do it. I mean, it seems to me that when we line up and turn around and hand the ball off behind the guard with no misdirection or anything of the sort, we struggle to move the ball that way. But when we do maybe counters, traps, the jet sweeps with R.J. Shelton have been working. I know you can't run those every time, but if you start to incorporate more of those and you can get to the 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 5 and 3rd and 4, then it becomes much more manageable when you have a quarterback that's, you know, he's good enough, but he's not going to go and be a Connor Cook and on 3rd and 15 scramble around maybe a little bit and then make a dart throw into a tight window to a receiver that got a little bit of separation. He's just not going to do that. So you have to get to 3rd and 15.
And you can't do it when you have receivers dropping the ball in some of those situations.
Sure.
There were three or four drops. It depends how you want to count this Monty Medeiros one. There was a short Monty Medeiros play. Excuse me. O'Connor had to roll out, and he was getting pressured heavily, and so he whipped the ball to Medeiros. Whether or not you want to constitute that as the drop makes a world of difference. O'Connor had three dropped balls, including the Corley one, which would have been, another 97 yards added to his passing yardage, totaled 132 yards in that Corley touchdown. He had four passes where he was forced to get rid of the ball. And there was another play he tried to throw a back shoulder throw to Corley. Corley never even stopped. He was well covered and probably would have fallen incomplete, but Corley never even stopped on the play. Right there, you're looking at 29 to 35 if those end up being complete, if he has a little more time. Now, I'm not saying, that should be the case every time, but O'Connor did not play bad at all, and those drops really end up hurting him, really hurt his perception with Michigan State fans, even though it was mostly on the receivers and the fact he was getting pressured and forced to roll.
Right, and I think, back to, the jet sweep thing with R.J. Shelton, who's averaging 13 yards a carry on 5 carries this year, even with a 32-yard one, that's still an average of around 7 if you take that one out. So the more you do that, even let's say they keep doing it more and teams start picking up on it and start to stop it more and more, even then it still opens up so much more options for fakes and then runs with L.J. Scott. You can fake it and do a pass off it. It makes your offense more creative than just – first and second down, let's turn around and run a dive or a trap or something like that, and now you're at 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10. Hopefully we don't get a holding penalty or anything stupid on the first two downs, and then we have to have our quarterback make a play on 3rd down. That's just not successful offense.
No, and you kind of saw it, the fake to R.J. Shelton. Monty Medeiros and Dalton Williams were both wide open on the play that Michigan State actually ran to Trevin Pendleton against U of M last year.
Yep.
And so you can get teams to bite off of that. So we've got about 6 minutes left. Look, we've admitted O'Connor is not great, but he's good enough to get the job done. He's good enough to do what Michigan State wants to do. What changes do need to be made? Because Michigan State still lost to IU.
I think two things. One, it starts with the play calling offensively needs to be more creative and more, less predictable, I guess is the way I'll put it. It's just, I feel like teams, when they play Michigan State, and even so last year, teams feared more Connor Cook making a play to Aaron Burbage down the field because we had players. They don't fear the system. They don't fear the plays that we're calling. They fear the fact that we had the players to do what we did. This year, I don't think they necessarily fear any of the players, and they still don't fear the system. So you have to be more creative, do something that makes defenses adjust. Right now, it seems to me that we're doing a lot of adjusting to defenses. We have to make the defense adjust to us. Our offense doesn't dictate the game at all. It starts up front, but it also starts with the play calling. And then defensively, just the biggest glaring issue to me still is the pass rush, the pressure that we're getting, whether it's dialing up more blitzes, being more creative, whatever they have to do. I think the secondary has played good enough so far this year to win football games. The rest of the front seven needs to do their job, especially on passing situations. They've done a pretty good job against the run, but in passing situations, they have to create more pressure.
Yeah, Malik McDowell's the only defensive lineman getting pressure. We kind of talked about Cooper kind of slouching. And you started to see – you didn't really see Austin Robertson a lot against Indiana. You saw Josh King. Here's the thing, though. Really quick, I do want to go back to the O'Connor thing. If you make – we said that you and me are talking about the changes that need to be made. If you make the change to the Lewerke, you're telling your veterans you're done with this season. That's what you're telling those
right.
guys. That's what you're telling these seniors or whatever. And you talk about the experience on the team. Yeah, Michigan State has a lot of youth. Oh, but they have a lot of experience. No, they have a lot of fourth- and fifth-year guys who haven't played. That's not experience.
Right.
That's age. And so
right.
there's a bit of a difference there. Brandon Clemens, come on, he didn't start. He was a spot player for Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
Monty Medeiros, five
mm-hmm.
catches for his career before this season. He had more catches in the Furman game than he had for his career.
Yeah,
no,
I think
that's
fans
not experience.
Too, right. Fans
and
too.
And so if you
also,
put Lewerke in, go ahead.
All I was going to say was I think fans think that Lewerke must be some sure thing. I think a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are thinking that things automatically will get better when Lewerke comes in. So what if Lewerke comes in and struggles, as he might, given he's a young quarterback? Then what do you do?
Yeah.
So I think that they haven't really thought about that either.
Oh, you put the Weaver in. No,
right.
I mean, they have options. Yeah, you don't do that, no. And so Michigan State does have options or whatever, but if you bring in the guy like Lewerke or even the Weaver, you're telling your vets that you mailed it in this season when there's not as much to play for as there was before the Indiana game, but you know what? Going and pissing off a bunch of Michigan fans or whatever, you can still play for that. You can play for a New Year's Six Bowl. So there's still options available for Michigan State, and they can still accomplish a lot, even though it started out kind of rough. But you kind of talked about Geiger struggles. Why haven't we seen Brett Scanlon? I mean, I'm not saying Scanlon's going to be better, but guess what? I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he's posting videos of him drilling 50-yarders. Geiger can't even make it to the upright. From 45. See Scanlon more. I do like seeing King and seeing Robertson a little bit more out there, and I think you might see Robertson maybe fly to the middle in spots, even though Raekwon and Kevin Williams are there. Gerald Owens is all right, but maybe see him fly towards to a defensive tackle spot, Finagic too. So you might see him a little bit more. Finley lost. Probably the biggest loss of the season because David Beadle has been absolutely horrible at left tackle.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, a team that's struggling right now in general, I mean, the fact that the injuries are starting to pile up a little bit, just as a whole with Frey, with Finley, I mean, it's, you know, you can't have – injuries happen at this time. It's almost one of those things where it rains, it pours, and I think that's part of the problem too is, you know, the injuries are starting to flood in, which may creep some doubt into some of the older players, may not have as much faith in the younger players to step up either, so.
Yeah, and the Finley thing, look, that's either his leg isn't completely healed from the Oregon game last year, or it's a mental thing and he's just not back on track yet, not in game shape or whatever it may be. But Michigan State definitely needs him right now. But that does it for us today. Be sure to check us out later this week. Previewing BYU for Grant Essenmacher. I'm Tyler Hayward. This was the iSports MSU Red Theater Report.